You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. This is the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and today is 9/27/21. Well, technology kind of been a focal point of my life. All the businesses I've managed to go into, businesses that I was in, always looked for a technological advantage, always looked to try to do something with technology that hadn't been done before. And it served me quite well. Never want to be quite on the bleeding edge of technology. That's where something comes out that day and you're lined up to buy it, the greatest, latest innovation. And then you become dependent on it and you find out it's loaded with bugs. It doesn't do what they said. I had that happen too many times. Going back to the birth of hard drives, or as they called them, Winchester drives, I never trusted being on that bleeding edge. Cost a fortune. And when you're on the bleeding edge, you're going to get cut and you may or may not be able to stop the bleeding. But we're living in a world where technological disruption is a way of life. We confront it every day, and we've seen every aspect of our lives, of your lives, be thrown into an upheaval. Whether it's using Alexa to use your international alarm clock, or turn on your lights, turn them off, whatever it is, technology is there, and it's just waiting to disrupt something else that you never thought needed disrupting, and you need to be prepared for that. Which is why we've got Rebecca Costa on with us, and now Rebecca is one of the top public speakers in the country. Works with Fortune 500 companies, you work with government agencies, universities, and you have a lot of insights here. So we're thrilled to have you. And if you got a question for Rebecca, just shoot us an email to kl@carrielutz.com. Rebecca, it's a pleasure to have you on. So what will I wake up tomorrow and see, or in the next couple of years, what's the next disruption coming from?
Well, that's a big question. And we would need more than one program to really delve into all the changes that are headed our way. It's important, I think, before we have a conversation about disruptive technologies, to remind ourselves that there are really no facts about the future. I know that experts like to pretend that they know exactly what's going to happen upstream, but there are only probabilities, and we're all dealing with increasingly more accurate probabilities based on predictive analytics. The way that that works is the more data you have, the more complex the algorithms get, and the more accurate those algorithms get. So as an example, we launched the GOES satellites into outer space a little over a year ago. And that gave us three times the weather data than we've ever had. But that three times the weather data translates into exponentially more accurate weather forecasts, to the point where my cell phone just pinged me not too long ago and said rain in 3 minutes. Now, that was a decade ago. That was unimaginable, right? And being the jerk that I am, I immediately hit my Apple iPhone stopwatch to see if it was going to be 3 minutes. And it wasn't exactly 3 minutes, but it was darn close. And I don't know if we could call it rain here on the Oregon coast. It was more like a mist. But the fact is that this is an unimaginable forecast. Rain in 3 minutes. Who thought we'd get pinged on our phone and know that? That kind of data is having a tremendously disruptive effect on how we think about markets and how we design products and services for those markets. And I may be the first one to say this, but we can no longer do market segmentation. It doesn't make sense anymore. what we're all doing now is moving toward a market of one individual. And this is perhaps the greatest disruption to business that we've ever experienced.
All right. So now we can find out it's going to rain in 3 minutes. That's got to be great for CNN because they could do real-time panic reports. So are we better off for this?
Well, you know, I can't say whether we're better off or not. And I'm not even sure that's a valid question. It doesn't matter whether we're comfortable with technology, whether we like it, whether we think it's terrible for humanity. It is what it is. We are a novelty-seeking organism. The acceleration, the rate at which progress begins to accelerate, can be tracked throughout the history since we became bipedal. And we're not going to stop. You cannot stop progress. You cannot stop technology. You cannot stop science. So you can sit at home or in your office and whine about it and complain about it and have all the thoughts and emotions that you want to have toward it. But it really doesn't matter because you cannot stop the engines of progress.
All right. So besides the weather, what's like a disruptive technology that you've encountered in the past, say, 6 months that you feel is really profound and underappreciated?
Well, in the last 6 months, I can tell you NFTs. I even hate to bring up NFTs because they're so obscure. Non-fungible tokens. Can you think of a more unfriendly name? What does it mean? Non-fungible.
You should go to the doctor. It sounds like a diagnosis. diagnosis, and it sounds like I got to use some antifungal spray on it. I mean, really?
Well, that's actually a good memory hook for all your listeners. Non-fungible tokens, NFTs. Anybody interested in the financial markets, in marketing, in commerce, in cryptocurrency? Ought to be all over NFTs. And if you don't understand them, you're not alone. Most people don't. But they are an outcropping of blockchain. We all knew that blockchain technology, having some immutable ledger, right, was going to give birth to a lot of other technologies. It's what I call a platform technology. And it was going to give birth to things like cryptocurrency. Well, when you stop and think about it, things that are created in the digital world, not transferred in the physical world to the digital world, but actually created. Let's take a piece of a simple example, a piece of artwork that I create electronically in the digital world. How would we ever know what the original is? I create it and I put a date stamp on it, but there's no guarantee that that is an original. And it may not matter because other people will copy it digitally. And so then all of a sudden there's 10,000 copies, 50,000 copies. So there's no way to value an original creation of anything on the internet. Until recently, there was a fellow who created a piece of digital art, and he mined it and created a non-fungible token that is immutable, that is now attached to that original piece of art. And the art sold for, I believe, $30 or $40 million. Now everything else is a copy of that original. Because remember, it's a blockchain. According to blockchain, it's immutable. Once the original has been tagged, now every time it's sold, it's like the Mona Lisa. It's the original, and the price goes up, 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 up. Now, if he was a smart guy, he not only tagged it as an original, he said, every time this is sold, I get a royalty. Mm-hmm. I get a percentage of the increase in the sale. Now, imagine in the music industry, I write a song, right? And I write the lyrics to a song. And now I say, this is the original lyrics. I'm now going to mine it, create an NFT, attach an NFT to it. And every time somebody uses this song, reproduces it digitally, but they use my lyrics, I'm entitled to royalties. This is how digitally created information and data, anything digitally created, now can have a value. And we didn't have this before. And this is going to have a huge disruption. And I, believe me, NFTs are new, and I've only begun to understand the financial ramifications of NFTs in the last 6 and 8 months.
Right. Well, you know, I'm still not sure about that stuff, but I guess if there's a market there, it'll succeed. And if there is no market, then it'll just be a flash in the pan. I wonder, like, who's behind it? Follow the money, as they say. But I guess we're going to find out more. Tell us another one. Maybe not as esoteric as, as NFTs, where you want to go get chemotherapy or something for them.
Well, no. But other things that people will be looking for is a change in robotics. You know, we're all familiar with the possibility that robots might be delivering our FedEx packages and those kinds of things. But we don't tend to think about large robots, mm-hmm. you know, robots the size of small buildings. And we really need to have our eye on that as well. Robots that, you know, we're used to robots being about the size of a human or smaller. But right now, nanotechnology is allowing robots to be made that are the size of a human cell, a single human cell. And eventually, instead of doing surgeries or having you go through chemotherapy, as you just mentioned earlier, we'll be injecting you with a nanobot that will be programmed to look for cancer cells or the plaques that occur prior to Alzheimer's. We'll be curing you from the inside out. And then you will just, when the robot is done with its job inside your body, you will just eliminate it with your normal waste. It will turn itself off and you will eliminate it with waste. And large robots, there are huge scale robots being used in Italy as an example to try to protect slopes during the rainy season. Now with climate change, these slopes are turning into huge mudslides and eradicating entire towns in Italy. And they're using these giant robots now to build in waterway paths for the water to move and to pack down the earth. And they are the size of, you know, huge, huge buildings. So we'll see a lot of that. We'll see robots really coming down in price and also changing in terms of their size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, robotics, we can see. Look at what's going on in like the Tesla factory. It's really amazing to watch. You see the snippets of, I know there's people involved, there's people doing stuff, but it seems like the bulk of the work in the factory is being done by robots. And they've got these gigapresses that are pushing out almost, you know, entire front ends of cars in one stamp. It's pretty amazing what's going on there.
Yes, any job that is routine, anything that requires precision and regular and is a regular process will be replaced by robots. That's already happened in large scale manufacturing to a large degree. What we haven't seen is robots enter into the area where we call social robots. Mm. There are some hotels in Japan that are almost entirely run by robots. When you check in to the front desk, robots greet you. They have facial recognition, so they immediately recognize you. They know what room you're in. They know what your food preferences are, whether you order breakfast in the morning, what time you wake, what time to dispatch cleaning robots to your room. So these hotels have already started springing up in Asia that are entirely run. I have a colleague of mine, Q Harrison, who's a futurist also and a technologist. And he recently checked into one of those hotels in Japan. And I think he used the word, it was very creepy.
That's so funny. Yeah, well, and the idea of they're using them in nursing homes in Japan, other functions. So this labor shortage that we've been seeing like in the United States and elsewhere, partly due to the global health issue, but also due to other reasons, this is an opportunity for more robotic implementation, isn't it?
Absolutely. Things that are routine, such as the fast food industry, really has no reason not to move to robotics. Fast food is very similar to the manufacturing plants that you were talking about earlier, like Tesla. It really wants routine. And the reason you want routine is because you want a Big Mac that you eat in Los Angeles, California, to taste the same as one that you eat in downtown Hong Kong. Right. When you walk into a McDonald's and you order a Big Mac, you expect it to look the same and taste the same. And that's the miracle of the fast food industry. And so to that end, it's a natural fit for robotics. And they seem to be hurting in terms of labor shortages right now, too. We see that also in agriculture. We don't have enough people to pick our food. And you see the large agricultural consortiums like out in the Salinas Valley of California coming together and tapping into robotics to train robots. It's very difficult to pick berries. They're very tender. It really requires very sophisticated robotics to pick a head of lettuce, for example, because every head comes out of the ground differently. Even though you try to grow them in a uniform way, it doesn't work that way. And so the first robots that were designed to pick lettuce were just ruining them. You know, it was treating them like basketballs. It wanted them all to be the same, and the leaves were getting brown and they were getting bruised. And, you know, the first few, the lettuce heads were flying every which way. It was quite comical. They really had to perfect how the robot would be able to interpret the root and handle gently that head of lettuce. And you can imagine the margins on heads of lettuce. They're so low. You really need the robot to be able to get every single head and treat it gently.
Right. Hey, what about like robotic lawnmowers? Those seem to be starting to be seen around the area, around the world. A lot of landscapers potentially, well, maybe that's the worst part of landscaping, and then they can do the creative stuff, maintain the shrubs, the hedges, but before long, there'll be robots doing that too, won't there?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
That's right. There will be, because they'll be able to recognize that that is a hedge and it's grown too high and it needs to be X number of feet tall and uniform. And remember, when we talk about robots, we can't leave out drones.
Yes.
We will have drones that will be able to prune your trees. You'll be able to identify, basically on your iPhone, you'll identify which branches you want pruned and where you want them pruned. You'll just move your cursor around and the drone will cut for you and pick up the branch. It won't come crashing down. Once 5G is really a reality, drones will be able to work together as teams. So it won't be a single drone that'll be working. When it's a heavier branch or payload that single drone can handle, it will call in its drone buddies and five of them will put wires or nets around the branch and then lower it into a burn pile or a truck.
I like it. Well, that sounds pretty amazing. And so what about self-driving vehicles? How long do you think it's going to be before we see fully autonomous vehicles on the road?
Well, technology advances like Swiss cheese. I tell people this, you know, you have a lot of cheese and then you run into a big hole. There's no cheese and there can't be any cheese in the hole or it wouldn't be Swiss cheese. So we run along really well, like I was mentioning, blockchain technology. We knew that was a necessary platform technology to have an immutable ledger so that we could watch transactions and they could not be changed or modified. And so we knew that was an enabling technology. It was a platform technology. For driving, for self-driving cars to really work, we need true 5G. And 5G right now has some problems. It doesn't communicate well in rain and through certain building walls, and it can only go relatively short distance. And I'm not talking about the 5G that Verizon's trying to sell more phones using. I'm talking about true 5G that will allow massive amounts of data to move instantaneously. Once that's, and let me tell you why that's important. It's important because envision this, envision cars on the road. There are no drivers. There's not going to be any steering wheels, brakes, no nothing. You're basically going to get into like a device that has a couch, right? And it may have some beverages that you can order and maybe a TV screen that you can, you know, entertain yourself with if you don't want to look out the window. But it's not going to look like the traditional car. But imagine that it's transporting you and it needs to make a left-hand turn. It's going to communicate to the other two cars. It's not going to tell you to put your hand out or put the blinker on. It's not going to use blinkers. It's going to tell the other two cars, hey, make a space. I've got to make the next left turn, and the other two cars will make a space just for that vehicle to be able to make a left-hand turn. So you can imagine we're not going to need traffic lights. We're not going to have stop signs. We're not going to have vehicles that have all of this junk to control the vehicle in it. But in order for that kind of data to be moving dynamically for thousands and millions of cars at one time, you have to have the bandwidth to be able to communicate machine to machine without human intervention. And that disruption is a ways away. We're 5-10 years out from real-time machine to machine communication.
So you don't think it's enough for the car like Tesla's model to actually be sensing conditions 360 and making decisions?
I think that we're going to get there, and I think Tesla is a good step forward. But as far as the ultimate, where cars are talking to other cars and humans don't have to intervene, we're going to have to build out that 5G network. And it's very expensive, and it's questionable as to who's going to own that network and who's going to invest the billions that's going to be required. I sat on a New York Times panel recently that was televised talking about 5G. And I unfortunately didn't know it was sponsored by Intel. I got there a little bit late and I didn't know who was sponsoring the actual panel. And apparently they were really upset with me because I said, look, you know, it's going to be really expensive. The transmissions don't work real well. They only go a matter of, you know, maybe 300 feet, 3000 feet. I mean, yeah, they're going to start in urban areas and they may never get out into, other countryside areas. I mean, it's a lot of money. A lot of money's got to go into building that infrastructure, and that kind of investment. Yeah, I'm not sure people are, you know, getting real excited about it now. Some of the money from the Biden administration's infrastructure program is designed specifically to look at building out 5G, because other countries are moving very, very quickly to build out that infrastructure. And we're behind. No question. The U.S. is behind.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see. What about privacy in all of this? Because with every technological innovation, it seems there's an erosion of personal privacy. All of your data now is up for grabs by various companies bidding for it, remarketing it, selling it for uses you don't necessarily want it to be used for.
There is no privacy.
Okay, so it doesn't matter. We're too late.
Doesn't matter. That train left the station 10 years ago.
Okay, well, so how do we get it back?
I mean, people are upset about, I don't understand why people are upset about privacy, data privacy. Do they not understand you don't have privacy? And once that toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't put it back. You can't say, well, I want to get my privacy now. It's just too late. Everybody owns your data. If they only knew what retailers like Amazon and Macy's and, you know, everyone's collecting, you wouldn't worry about whether the government has metadata on you. I mean, you know, you already kind of have a sense of this because you go to order, I don't know, purple drapes. And the next day there are five, you know, pop-up ads that come up on your devices for purple drapes. Somebody's got to figure out a way to tell those guys you already bought the drapes. Leave me alone. I already bought the car. Stop sending me car ads.
shut the stuff off. Leave me alone.
There's no way to shut it off after you've already done the transaction. That back end is a little annoying.
Yeah, there's no closed loop.
That's right. It's not closed loop. So if you're looking for a car and you're searching for a car, you're going to get car ads, car ads, car ads, even after you bought the car.
All right. But, you know, like, look, the idea, though, in like the German data protection rule, California, where they have to tell you all this stuff now that they're doing, give you the opportunity to opt out. Is that just for show or does it matter?
You know, all of this stuff that we do, so much of it's just for show, right? I mean, you go into an escrow office to buy a house. If you bought a house, you know darn well you didn't sit there and read every document they gave you because they gave you 500 pages and you had to sign like, you know, maybe 50 of them. And you didn't sit there reading through all the fine print. So every time they say, well, we're going to put warnings out, they're pages long. And you notice you scroll to the end and it says, I agree. There's a box that says, I agree. And you click on it.
Yeah, box top licensing. And evidently, it's somewhat enforceable in court.
Yeah, of course it's enforceable because you've agreed. You've agreed to it. I tell people, you know what? How many credit cards do you have? Do you know what you signed up for when you signed up for those credit cards? Absolutely not. Most people don't know that if your credit score even changes one point,
yeah,
that credit card companies have in their contract an agreement that you agreed to that says that they can raise your, even if your score goes up, that they can raise your interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
Any change, it says clearly, any change to your credit score. Now, they don't abuse that. Well, in some cases they do if your credit score goes down. But, you know, everybody has signed up for that and said, yeah, okay, you can raise it. And by the way, there's no cap on what they can raise it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we do these things, but they're more for show. Nobody in their right mind is going to read all these warnings and then say, well, you know, I better not sign up for it till I read all the fine print. And then what if you don't agree with it?
Yeah.
If you don't click that I agree box, you're not going to get the product or the service. So there you go.
So isn't that a form of coercion?
No, it's just a con job.
Oh, okay. So is that better than
con job? It's this false sense of protection that we're giving the consumer that will put the blame back on the individual. All we do every day, the government, companies, corporations, is say, you are responsible because you agreed to those terms. We warned you and you agree. However, the warning was something that no one would take the time to read 500 pages in the escrow office. What are you going to do? Say, give me a conference room. I'll be back for the next week.
Yeah, well, in theory, you could negotiate a little bit on some of those things, but nobody's doing it. You got hundreds.
No. You can overwhelm the consumer very easily. Nowadays, nobody has time for anything. Right. And so you can overwhelm the consumer and then you can say, hey, you know what? I warned you. It was right there in black and white and you agreed to it. So it's your fault.
Well,
there's this sort of hammering down on the individual that you agreed to it. You were warned. You knew what you were getting involved in.
Yeah, well, we used to call these in law school adhesion contracts, but I guess that doctrine no longer applies. In parting, is humanity going to be better off for all this disruption? Are we going to be worse off, or does it not matter?
Doesn't matter. Progress is progress. Doesn't matter if you like it. Doesn't matter if you think humanity's better off or not better off. Doesn't matter if you wish you'd had more data privacy. These things don't matter because we're moving in a certain direction. And the only thing you can do is try to understand what's coming next and get out in front of it.
Or get out of the way of it. Maybe if you can. You know, it reminds me of a joke once heard that a guy is going for an IRS audit, and he asks his accountant, should I wear my good suit and look like I'm prosperous and a force to be dealt with, or should I wear my worn out crumbly suit and then they'll take pity on me and not hit me too hard? And the accountant says, you know, that reminds me of a story. A young woman is going to get married, and she's worried about her wedding night. And she goes to her rabbi and says, Rabbi, you know, I'm getting married and I'm worried, when we go to bed for the evening, should I wear my beautiful new gown or should I wear my rumpled up gown? And the rabbi says, you know what? Rumpled up gown, new gown, doesn't matter. Either way, you're going to get you-know-whatted. That's what technology comes down to, right?
I have not heard that joke, but it's true. It does. Look, I know we've spent decades telling people that your feelings matter. But in this particular case,
no, they don't. That's ridiculous.
Your feelings don't matter. Progress is going to happen. You may not like what it's doing to the next generation. You may not feel comfortable with it. You may even feel some fearfulness or some stress about the fact that things are changing quicker and quicker and that we don't seem to have control over it. And that is all true, but it is reality that we have to deal with.
Yeah, well, I don't know whoever said anybody to anybody that their feelings matter, maybe in relationships, but as far as the rest of the world is concerned, they care less about your feelings. You know, when it comes to technology, your feelings are irrelevant. So in any event, just tell us where we find out more about you. Rebecca, how we connect with you on the web?
We just launched a podcast. When I say we, my team here at The Costa Report just launched a podcast, so they can look it up on The Costa Report, or they can go to my website, which is just my name, RebeccaCosta.com.
Well, I was going to ask you how you feel about all that, but like you said, when it comes to technology, feelings don't matter. Rebecca, we really appreciate you coming on the show. We will talk to you again. You're our official technology bird dog here. You're going to let us know what's coming our way before we get slammed by it. Really appreciate you coming on. If you got a question for Rebecca, shoot me an email to kl@kerrylutz.com. Don't forget, sign up for your free newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Rebecca, a pleasure. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.